Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. This week, things at Occupy Wall Street got ugly. We don't mean the police reaction. We don't mean what an average protester smells like after 2 weeks of not bathing and eating nothing but lentils. We'll ask about the cause for dissent in the ranks. Plus, Alan Alder returns to play our games. And Carl Castle, in his first visit to Indianapolis, lays out some conditions for the audience here.
Do not speak unless you're spoken to.
We'll ask who really wanted people to be seen and not heard. It's coming up in our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. A rare October snowstorm has dumped more than 2 feet of snow in parts of Massachusetts. 650,000 customers there are without power. The governor has declared a state of emergency. From Boston, NPR's Tovia Smith reports some residents may have to wait days for lights and heat to come back on.
This is the kind of storm that would rattle even a hardy New Englander, even in January. But in October, says Emergency Management Agency spokesman Peter Judge, it's one for the record books.
This is incredibly unusual just to have some snow, but the type of snow and the amounts just off the charts.
The combination of heavy, wet snow on trees that still have leaves means an extraordinary amount of fallen limbs and downed power lines. Chainsaw crews are fighting to clear roads to let utility workers through. The pounding adds insult to injury to an area that also in the past year has endured an equally rare tornado, a hurricane, and a once-in-a-hundred-year ice storm. Tovia Smith, NPR News, Boston.
Qantas flights could head skyward again by later today after a court ordered an end to a strike. The carrier abruptly grounded all flights yesterday, leaving tens of thousands of passengers around the world stranded. An Australian court ruled in favor of the airline today, which argued it needed certainty to continue operating. The airline's union workers have been holding strikes and refusing to work overtime out of concern that the carrier's restructuring plans could move jobs out of Australia. Chinese police say they have arrested more than 12,000 people for dealing drugs on the Internet. From Shanghai, NPR's Frank Langfitt reports it's a wide-ranging operation.
China's Ministry of Public Security says it's recently busted more than 140 drug production and trafficking rings and confiscated over 600 pounds of illegal drugs. Police say some suspects were using online video platforms to sell drugs. Officials in the western Chinese cities of Lanzhou and Xi'an say suspects were also dealing drugs through online chat rooms. Earlier this month, the Ministry of Justice said China faces a, quote, grave situation regarding drug abuse. Officials cited the Internet and the increasing mobility of the country's citizens. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Shanghai.
Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron says he's changing the policy for British merchant ships sailing in the waters off the coast of Somalia, where pirates operate with impunity.
We are now going to say to British flagships that they will be licensed, if they want to have security guards, armed guards, on those ships. I want to make sure more of these pirates actually face justice, and I want us to have a far greater focus on this broken country, Somalia.
Up until now, Britain has been one of only a few countries that banned armed guards on its vessels. Japan, Greece, and the Netherlands continue to bar them. This is NPR News. The city manager of Atchison, Kansas, Trey Cocking, says three people are still unaccounted for after last evening's deadly explosion at a grain elevator.
We do have three confirmed fatalities. We have three missing at this time.
Two people are at a hospital in critical condition, which the blast shook the ground as far as 4 miles away. Rescue workers are digging through the rubble as they search for the missing. The UN's refugee agency is mounting an emergency airlift for victims of the earthquake that struck eastern Turkey a week ago. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein reports officials estimate at least 580 people were killed and more than 4,000 are injured.
Four humanitarian flights, which are scheduled to end Monday, are bringing tens of thousands of tents, blankets, and sleeping mats to the disaster victims in the Turkish city of Van and surrounding areas. UN refugee spokesman Adrian Edwards says the full impact of the earthquake is still being assessed.
The city of Van alone has a population of more than 400,000. Many of them have lost homes. Hundreds of buildings collapsed and thousands of others have been rendered uninhabitable. The shelter needs are great.
Edward says the local authorities have distributed more than 25,000 tents. The Turkish government is appealing for 80,000 winterized tents and transitional shelters to protect people from the freezing cold. For NPR News, I'm Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
Pakistani officials say a U.S. drone missile strike has killed at least four militants. They say today's attack struck an area in North Waziristan that's a key base for insurgents. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Valvoline, maker of Next Gen Motor Oil, engine protection with oil made from 50% recycled stock. Learn more at Valvoline.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Clues Memorial Hall in Indianapolis, Indiana, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Oh, you Hoosiers. Thank you so much. We do have a great show for you today. We got our old friend Alan Alda coming by later in. It's great to make our debut. It's great to make our debut finally here in Indianapolis, especially because this is the first major city that we were able to drive to from Chicago. Now, we still wanted to be safe, so instead of the TSA screenings, before our crew got in the van, we had Carl Castle pat everyone down.
Please, please turn your head and cough.
It worked out fine. Anyway, you pose no threat. You're on the phone. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener, contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sylvia from Buffalo, Wyoming.
Buffalo, Wyoming? I have not heard of Buffalo, Wyoming. Where is that?
Well, we're located in the middle of nowhere, northern Wyoming.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You might, it occurs to me, unlike the other buffalo, more well-known, you might actually have buffalo in Buffalo, Wyoming. Is that the case?
You know what? I think we actually do.
You're not sure? Because they're hard to miss, has been my experience. They're large, shambling beasts.
I know we serve them in town at restaurants.
They eat at your restaurant?
Yeah.
Really? No, they come in? No. Oh, yeah. Buffalo welcomed here, they
buffalo
say.
Buffalo served here.
They have buffalo sections. Well, welcome to the show, Sylvia. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author of the new audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 Years of Comments and Comic Pieces, available at a download near you, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Sylvia. Yeah.
Next, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Sylvia.
Finally, it's a comedian who'll be performing at the Belly Room at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles on November 3rd. It's Brian Babylon.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Brian.
So, Sylvia, welcome to the show. You'll start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, as he habitually does. We'll recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you win our prize. Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right, then. That's kind of fatalistic. But let's just go. Here we go. Here is your first quote.
I hate drum circles, but I hate corporate greed more.
That was a sign held at one of the many protests that are finally going big time. What protests?
The Wall Street protests?
Yeah, the Occupy Wall Street protests, they're called. They're still going on. It was a momentous week for the protesters. Now, early in the week at Zuccotti Park in New York, the drummers who want to bang on their drums all day were banging on their drums, but the protesters' governing body wanted to get some sleep, so they tried to limit the drummers to 2 hours a day. And the reaction from the drummers was, quote, "They're becoming the government, we're trying to protest." The anti-drumming faction then accused the drummers of being in the pocket of Big Bongo. Then the drummers responded by forming their own new protest movement, Occupy, Occupy Wall Street, which was countered by an even newer group, We Are the 99% Who Hate All of That Damned Drumming.
Now, you know, Peter, I went to Zuccotti Park on Sunday. I had to see it for myself. And it was a few people with good messages sprinkled in, but I couldn't concentrate because, like, Darth Vader was pop-locking, you know, next to him. This guy was in the Darth Vader suit pop-locking. And I'm like, Darth Vader, you're 1%, man.
I was about to say.
You have, like, a union workforce building Death Stars and all that. I mean, it was insane.
But then later in the week, the movement was given a vote of confidence by the Oakland police, who raided their encampment. I mean, you do not waste tear gas in some third-rate fly-by-night protest, right? Authorities claim they were concerned about the dangerously unsanitary conditions at the protesters' camp. Oh, that's what it was. We assume they then went and sent a SWAT team to blow up the nearest Taco Bell. I mean, that was their thing. They said, oh, we needed to throw tear gas and flash grenades and violently expel them from the grounds because we were concerned about, you know, their sanitation. How does the police chief of Oakland clean his toilet? Throw a grenade in it and flush?
I see a nice marketing opportunity for Febreze and all this.
Yeah, I just see. Well, you know what's funny? It's funny that you should mention that, because somebody this week, it's been a big week for Occupy Wall Street, somebody tried to file a trademark on the term Occupy Wall Street so they can sell protester merch.
America, baby.
Yeah. In fact, this is so mainstream. MTV is creating a reality show about the Occupy protesters. They're young, they're cute, they're hooking up, they have a progressive critique of the distribution of wealth. And they can do a crossover episode with the Jersey Shore and address the inequality of silicone distribution on JWoww. Your next quote is an emailed instruction to the campaign staff of a GOP presidential candidate, one who is still, surprisingly, the front runner.
Do not speak to him unless you're spoken to.
Who doesn't want anybody flapping their lips at him?
Oh, boy. Herman Cain?
Yes, Herman Cain, right.
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing about presidential candidate Herman Cain. He is still leading the national polls of GOP voters, but he doesn't do any of the things that successful traditional presidential campaigns do, like have a presidential campaign. In addition to refusing to talk to his own staff, they rarely even know where he is. He keeps mangling his own policy statements, if he can figure out what they are, or he mocks the very idea of expertise. Quote, when they ask me who's the president of Ubeki, Becky, 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 Stan, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know, unquote. That statement, by the way, really hurt U.S. relations with Ubeki, Becky, 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 Stan. They have threatened to cut off their exports of excess syllables.
I think you're missing the point here.
I am?
Well, you said he's not running a presidential campaign, but it's not at all clear he wants to be president. I think he's just having a fabulous time.
Mm-hmm. I just want to see how far this is going to go.
Well, how far can it go?
Well, it can. You never know. You see, if he has no organization,
right.
He has no staff, he has no clear policies. He's trying to co-opt the Occupy Wall Street
right.
momentum. You
exactly.
See.
It's like the great thing about America is anybody can be president. The tragic thing about America, anybody can be president. All right. Here is your last quote.
You all right?
Okay. That was Carl's interpretation of the birth of a baby. And this baby, who'll be joining us soon, will have a very important distinction. Do you know what that baby will be? Wherever it's born, somewhere in the world?
I sure don't.
No? It's an important distinction in terms of world population.
No.
How about, I'll give it to you. At sometime within the next week or so, the 7 billionth person is going to be born on this planet. Nobody knows where, nobody knows exactly when, but we can be sure that child, whenever he or she is born, will look around at what our planet is like now and immediately try to go back in. 7 billion people, that is too many people. Can we declare the planet at capacity? We must be violating some sort of fire code, right? And this is interesting. For the 6 billionth baby, which was only like 12 years ago, they actually named the baby, so the baby has grown up. I'm number 6 billion. But for the 7 billion baby, they're asking all the countries to nominate their own so they can have various candidates to be the 7 billionth baby. And weirdly, Herman Cain is leading that poll too.
You know, there's twice as many people in the world as there was when I was born.
Really?
Yeah. And you know what? I've noticed it.
Have you?
Yes, I have. I have. It was a lonelier place as a child.
What do you guys think sparked this? Is it the internet?
What, the population boom?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Harlequin romance?
No, the internet has actually suppressed population because all over the world are people like, come to bed. No, there's another blog I have to check. And so.
Yeah.
I blame reality TV.
How so?
I just blame reality TV on everything.
No, I see. Carl, how did Sylvia do in our quiz?
Sylvia, you had 2 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done.
Thank you. Great and quiet.
Thanks so much for playing.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. We want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium. You can also see us December 8th in Lexington, Kentucky. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, the Chinese government announced this week it's going to start limiting public access to television shows that are what? You can only watch the television shows from now on in China that are what?
I think they're doing this in our country, too. It's shows that are entertaining.
Yes, no more entertaining shows on Chinese TV. Across America, people are marching in the streets because their homes are being foreclosed on. In China, the big problem, TV is too entertaining. TV stations there must phase out fun shows completely by next year, leaving only the boring ones. The idea is people will choose to spend their time then contributing to culture rather than watch something called Dancing with Actuaries. After the anti-entertainment reforms are in place, Chinese viewers will only be able to see educational programs, government propaganda, and PBS.
So I saw this article and it said that they're only allowed 90 minutes of entertainment programming in a week. So, like, what are they watching?
Well, they have these Chinese versions of American shows. Like, their version of Seinfeld is about this quiet guy with some very contented friends and a perfectly normal neighbor who always knocks before entering.
Yeah.
Their version of 2 1/2 Men is about the aftermath of a terrible accident at an iPhone factory. It's very tragic.
And their show Big Brother is really just a civics lesson.
Right. Coming up, our panelists just give up and go with the flow in our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Lumber Liquidators, with hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring, a floor finder app and information online at lumberliquidators.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
At public colleges is up 8%. The nation's student loan debt nears $1 trillion.
Now, living with that kind of debt means making some pretty tough choices.
President Obama lays out a relief plan, but some say it's not enough. I'm Neil Conan. Students, how have loans affected your decisions? Plus the opinion page. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
I'm Krista Tippett. Next time on Being, renowned Tibetan Buddhist teacher Matthieu Ricard. He trained as a cell biologist and is now part of the Dalai Lama's ongoing dialogue with scientists. We'll explore why he's been called the happiest man in the world and how he understands spirituality as contemplative science. Please join me. That's from 8 p.m.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 54 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Brian Babylon, Tom Baudet, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Clues Memorial Hall in Indianapolis, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. How are you? This is Brent.
Hey, Brent. How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling you from Fayetteville, North Carolina today.
What are you? You're traveling around, or you be someplace else tomorrow?
I'm here for some training at Fort Bragg. I'm a military intelligence officer, and for the last 3 weeks.
Hey. Got some fans here. Well, welcome to the show. It's good to have you. Brent, you're going to play the game which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carol, what is Brent's topic?
If you can't beat them, join them.
When life gives you lemons, sometimes you just have to give in and eat the damn lemons. Our panelists are going to read you three stories this week of efforts to solve problems by embracing them. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes, sir.
First, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
We've all had the experience of flipping through the 600 channels on the TV to find nothing but a big steaming pile of programming you can't imagine anyone watching. Well, this general impression of non-premium cable offerings has presented a real problem for cable providers now required by the FCC to sell their channels a la carte. When you can no longer bundle Bridezilla with the Ellen Show, the bride is going to get left at the altar, says industry spokesperson Marcia Arend. We had to figure out how to add some market buzz to, face it, some pretty awful television. That's when we came up with curiously ridiculous adult programs. Crap TV offers the entire lineup of channels you used to only watch drunk or in the basement guest room at your relatives. Judge Alex, Wheeler Dealers, CNN. And people are paying for it, says Aaron. We sell crap TV as a guilty pleasure. It is the white powdered donut to premium cable's banana nut muffin. You know, sometimes you just gotta go for the donuts.
Crap TV, that its name. Bad stuff packaged as a guilty pleasure. Your next story of someone giving up the fight comes from Roxanne Roberts.
After years of trying to stop Halloween pranks, egging cars, whitewashing homes, and the classic toilet paper in the trees, the town of Arcady, California, has taken all the fun out of vandalism by turning it into performance art. The first ever Charmin All Hallows exhibit kicks off at dusk Monday with smashed pumpkins, graffiti, teepeed houses, and other, quote, art, part of the citywide installation. Charmin paid $1 million for the naming rights. Famed artist Christo will select the winning entry, which gets a lifetime supply of toilet paper. Quote, we tried arrest, fines, street patrols. Nothing stopped the trash, Mayor Todd Whitman told the Associated Press. So we thought, modern art. Not everyone is happy about the idea. Quote, they co-opt Halloween, grumbled a teenage gang member who said he tossed out his spray paints. Quote, now I'm taking my little sister trick or treating.
Down in California, co-ops vandalism by making it an art form. Your last story of surrender, sweet, sweet surrender, comes from Brian Babylon.
All right. Drunks will be drunks, from bar fights that spill out onto the street to a high hill that'll break from too many Jaeger bombs. In an effort to cut down injuries from late-night curbside drunkenness, Australian officials have tried a bouncy approach. Rubber sidewalks. The installation of matting made from recycled rubber tiles started as an effort to cut down on clunky keg noises. They're even putting them up in clubs, said Steve Thomas, head of marketing from A1 Rubbers. Nobody sees the rubber sidewalks as a cure for Australia's drinking woes, but this bouncy solution is taking off all across Australia.
All right. Let me review the problems and the solutions. From Tom Baudet, cable shows that simply weren't selling. They were packaged together in a package called Crap TV, so you could just enjoy that bad programming as a special treat. From Roxanne Roberts, toilet paper in the trees in a town in California. They couldn't stop it, so they made it into a contest in modern art. or from Brian Babylon, you can't stop the Australians from drinking, getting drunk, and falling down, so why not just make the sidewalks rubber? Which of these is a real story of a creative solution to a problem that otherwise couldn't be fixed?
Well, I like Brian's story, but I don't know that a Commonwealth country would name a company A1 Rubbers. So, Roxanne, I'm going with your story.
All right. You've chosen Roxanne's story, as so many have before you. Bring you the real answer. We spoke to someone familiar with it.
Rubber sidewalk, providing a safe surface to anybody who drinks, because when you fall on it, nothing breaks.
That was Lindsay Smith, founder and CEO of Rubber Sidewalks Incorporated, an American company, I believe. She was speaking to the merits of spongy sidewalks and why they're perfect for dealing with drunks. So, as so many have before you, you've been seduced by the wiles of Roxanne Roberts. Sadly, you didn't win our prize. You didn't earn a point for Roxanne, for which I'm sure she's very appreciative.
Thank you for having me on the show, Peter.
Thank you, Brandon. Thanks for your service.
Thanks, Brett.
Good luck. And now the game where we invite people we like to answer questions about things they don't care about. You know Alan Alda as an actor, most famously as Hawkeye Pierce in the classic comedy MASH, but now he's making his debut as a professional playwright. We've invited him on to break the news to him that the lead actress never goes out with the writer. Alan Alda, welcome back to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Great to hear from you.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you. So, you've written a play, and we understand it's about Marie Curie.
Right.
Well, how did you come to write a play about Marie Curie?
Well, I helped put on the World Science Festival every year in New York, and I thought about 4 years ago it would be fun to do an evening where actors read the letters of Marie Curie. And I found out that all her letters are in the National Library in Paris, but they're still radioactive.
Really? Can they be read?
Well, yeah, you don't even need to turn a lamp on.
No. So, I mean, am I right in that this is your professional... I mean, you've done so many things, but this is the first time you've written a professionally produced play?
Well, I think I could actually say I wrote my first play when I was 8 years old.
Really?
My father had been in burlesque, and we had all these... I used to stand in the wings in burlesque and watch the sketches and the strippers, too, but I got a lot of inspiration from the sketches as well. Watching from the wings gave me a lifelong interest.
In what, Alan?
Right.
Yeah.
So I wrote, the first thing I wrote was a courtroom sketch with a comedian judge, you know.
Oh, I see.
Just like in burlesque. And I'm still writing now, just like that, only now they have more clothes on.
Oh, well. Okay. You're also in a new movie coming out, Tower Heist, yes?
Tower Heist, that's right.
And I love this because if I understand the plot, there's sort of a Bernie Madoff type character, this wealthy guy who rips off all the workers in his building through some sort of Ponzi scheme. And they have their vengeance, and that's the plot of the movie.
Do you have a problem with that?
No! But I love the fact, because I'm the guy who grew up watching you play Hawkeye Pierce on MASH, the nicest guy in the Korean War. I love the fact that when the producer of this movie said, who are we going to play... Who are we going to get to play this hateful, scheming, awful person, the hatred of whom motivates every other character in the movie? I know, Alan Alda.
You can't play these characters unless you see the world from their point of view. And I really don't know what everybody's problem is with this. I stole a couple of $100 million. What is that, a crime?
We understand, and it's interesting, again, talking to you about playing villains, because we understand you have a reputation, and have always had a reputation, of being a genuinely nice guy.
And I don't have to take this kind of talk from you.
I understand. All right, destroy that reputation right now for good.
Yeah.
What is the worst thing that you, Alan Alda, have done?
When I was about 10 years old, I gave my teacher an April Fool's sandwich, which had a dead goldfish in it.
Pretty bad.
That's terrible.
And, he had just caught me drawing a picture of a naked girl. So he wrestled it out of my hand, and I was really pissed at him.
So
I can imagine.
I first behaved nicely to him, and sure. I said, open the sandwich, because I thought he'd see it and laugh. He said, no, no, and he took a bite, and he's sitting there with the tail of the fish hanging out of his mouth.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think to myself, should I warn him or let him die?
And what did you do?
I let him die.
Yeah. That'll show him. And how do you feel about it now, this many years later?
Oh, I'd let him die all over.
I understand. Well, Alan Alda, it's a thrill to talk to you always. This time we've asked you here to play a game that we're calling...
You are the assistant keeper of the royal privy.
We know a fair amount about the Queen of England. For example, she is rarely amused. But we don't know much about the people who serve the British royal household until now. A new book called Not in Front of the Corgis details life behind the scenes in the monarchy. Answer 2 out of 3 questions about the royal household. You'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Alan Alda playing for?
He is playing for Rebecca and Michael Wigginton of Indianapolis.
Wait a minute. Wait, just give me a second. I want to get... Okay, I'm in the bathroom. Go ahead.
That's going to help, I know. Here's your first question. Which of these is a real duty carried out dutifully by one of Prince Charles's valets, as they say over there? A, ironing the prince's shoelaces. B, flossing the prince's teeth. Or C, carrying the prince's teddy bear at all times.
I think it's his shoelaces.
Ironing his shoelaces?
Yeah.
You're right. Well done. So, the next time you meet the Prince of Wales, look down. Next question. The household staff at Buckingham Palace are famed for their attention to detail. Before the President and Mrs. Obama visited in May, inquiries were made as to the first family's preference in what? A, style of toilet paper. B, thread count in sheets. Or C, late night mood music.
I think the question they'd be least embarrassed and least stupid to ask would be the mood music.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I think.
I see. I think that's very personal.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Is that a hint?
No, really? I'm just thinking of like your logic is interesting. That's the least embarrassing thing to ask.
Besides, you know it's Barry White.
I know. Is that your final choice? A late night mood music?
Yes, damn it.
This happened last time. You're this nice guy comes on our show. You end up swearing. I guess we're the exception. No, actually, the answer was style of toilet paper. They actually inquired before the president's visit as to the first family's preference in, quote, thickness, consistency, and color of toilet paper. Last question. The work in the royal household is not for everyone. On at least one occasion, a royal servant had to perform which of these delicate tasks? A, picking out food debris from the mustache of Prince Philip. B, making secret late-night Marmite runs for Sarah Ferguson. Or C, lubricating the trousers of the Earl of Mountbatten.
I have to tell you, I'm stunned by those choices.
I know, they're good ones. You're pleased about them.
Wait, could you just get it a little bit more in detail about why you would lubricate somebody's trousers?
Well... I mean, perhaps they were very tight trousers, and they're very difficult to get on, particularly if your Earl or Duke has gotten on in years, enjoyed the little, you know, Yorkshire puddings a little bit much, and might need a little help, and maybe even a little slippery stuff to get them on.
What would you lubricate them with?
Yeah. Yeah, go into some more detail. Yeah. I mean, is he trying to get... into them or out of them?
Well,
probably both.
In fact, probably, as it might happen, you might need help if you were the Earl of Mountbatten trying to get into these ceremonial pants. You might need... I didn't mean that, Alan. Trying to get into your own ceremonial pants. You might need a little lubrication on the way in and a little help from the valet or the footman on the way out. As would we all, were we the Earl of Mountbatten.
I can't remember the other two.
As we got lubricated pants. Secret late night Marmite runs.
The hell does that mean?
Well, under this theory,
it's like a ferret.
It is not.
Is a Marmite a rodent?
No. Marmite is
in the weasel family.
It's a tasty.
It is not tasty.
Well, some people think it is a tasty yeast spread that they enjoy there in Britain. So presumably Sarah Ferguson, as we know, can get a little peckish of an evening, so presumably she would ask her servant to run out, grab her some Marmite without telling anyone.
See, that's why I had no chance here. I thought that was a marmoset you were talking about.
No. Get me a marmoset! No, I don't.
And don't forget...
What the hell does she need with a rodent in the middle of the night?
That is a good question. Maybe you can write that one off.
Lubricated pants. I'm going to go with the marmoset.
You're going to go with Sarah Ferguson going out and getting some sort of rodent in the middle of the night.
Yeah, well, that Marmite stuff. Yeah.
Marmite stuff. Have you ever tasted Marmite?
No, I thought it was a thing, an animal.
No, it's not an animal. It's this terrible tasting yeast spread.
Yeah.
So Sarah Ferguson had a yeast problem in the middle of the night.
That.
And the other guy had a lubricated pants. It's all adds up.
So, food debris for the mustache, Marmite, lubricated pants.
It's the pants.
It's the pants, yes, it's the pants. Some people. In fact, the Earl of Mountbatten had difficulty getting to these very snug breeches costume for a royal parade, so the valet applied talcum powder, was the lubricant, which allowed him to slide right in, and then after the parade, he had to peel him right off. Carl, how did Alan Alda do?
It took a bit, Peter, but he finally got two correct answers. So that means Alan wins for Rebecca and Michael Whittington.
Well done. Alan Alda's play, Radiance, The Passion of Marie Curie, opens at the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles on November 1st. You can also see Alan Alda in the movie Tower Heist, opening next weekend. Alan Alda, thank you so much for being with us. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
In just a minute, Carl loses his marbles. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to help him get them back. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Motel 6, offering an iPhone app for booking a room at locations throughout the country. Available from the App Store, motel6.com.
Where they'll leave the light on for you.
They certainly will. Pimsleur Language Program, offering tools to record an answering machine greeting in 45 languages. Learn more at pimsleur.com. And eSurance, providing car insurance shopping tools like real-time comparison quotes and coverage counselors. Learn more at eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Humbless leaf on the tree.
Tom Waits from his new CD, Bad as Me. Keith Richards joins him on a couple of tracks, including this one. We hear from Tom Waits on the next Fresh Air.
Humbless leaf on the tree.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers.
You know, I'm having all kinds of problems trying to trade in my old car.
Oh, dealer's still insisting that it run, huh?
Exactly. If it ran, I wouldn't have to trade it in.
Well, if your old car won't leave the driveway or won't leave it reliably, donate it to this station through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
You'll help pay for the programs you love, and you'll pocket a tax deduction.
Pretty good, huh? Here's how to do it.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, WPLN.org.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Support for our programming comes from WPLN listener members and from Lipscomb University's Theater Department presenting the Tony Award-winning musical Hairspray, November 3rd through 6th in Collins Alumni Auditorium. Ticket information is available online at theater.lipscomb.edu. The time is 11:39, 56 degrees in Nashville.
Thank you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Brian Babylon, Tom Baudet, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Clues Memorial Hall in Indianapolis, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl does his best to help out the struggling Indianapolis Colts by playing middle linebacker. The listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, it's time for a game we're calling...
Work It, Girl!
We don't often talk about the world of high fashion and good-looking people in the show because they say, write what you know. But now we're going to ask you each about a hot fashion trend. Get it right, you each get a point. Here we go. Roxanne, first one's for you. You know models, they must have fashion models. They got to have long legs, flat tummies, razor-sharp cheekbones. But fashion directors are looking for something extra in the models they use these days. What? A, really gorgeous earlobes. B, very sexy armpits. Or C, a generous heart. Just kidding, it's one of the other ones.
I'm going to go for the armpit.
You're right. Says an unnamed modeling insider quoted, or more likely just made up, by London's Daily Mail. There's a definite trend of armpit posing at the moment. All right, Tom, next one for you. According to the New York Times, some women believe they will look better if they do what? A, get their teeth crooked. B, get their eyes crossed. C, get their friends fattened.
Third one might work. Yeah. The first one actually sounds kind of crazy enough. I think it is crooked teeth. I think it makes them look endearing.
You're right.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're right in that it makes them look endearing, but you're right, it's crooked teeth. The Times says women in Japan are paying dentists to get artificial plastic crowns that make their teeth look crooked.
Well, you know, you had the Laura Hutton, you had the Frenchie lady.
Frenchie lady?
She was French.
One of them
Bridget
French.
Bridget Bardot. Weren't her teeth kind of tweaky a little bit?
She's a little overbiting.
I never once looked at her teeth.
Oh, Peter.
Brian, this last one's for you. A new clothing line from designer Spencer Richardson stands out from the rest. Why? A, each garment comes doused in a pungent scent, such as industrial waste or fish. B, the sweaters have little bullet holes and blood spatter to make it look like you've been shot. Or C, he insists everyone else can see the clothes, it's just that you can't.
What was the first one?
The first one is each garment comes not only with a specific look, but a specific scent. Very powerful ones, like industrial waste, fish.
Yeah, it's the first one.
Really?
Nah, I'm going to go with the... I'm just joking around. This is that new urban streetwear to make it more realistic. You can be pretend you're a rapper. I'm gonna go with the second one.
Yeah, bullet holes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can
They're
have
cute.
A 50 cents lifestyle.
You're cute until someone shoots you for wearing such a dumb sweater and the EMT can't figure out which ones are real. That does it for Fashion Week at Wait Wait, or as Carl says,
1 minute you're in and the next you're out.
Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Brian, according to an analysis by Business Insider, what group has contributed more than $6 billion to the economy?
What industry has... Or give me a light hint.
Brains.
Oh, the zombies.
Zombies, yes.
Yeah.
Zombies.
They're everywhere.
Every era has its icon. The 60s, for example, had that square-jawed super spy. And now, in the best representation of our hopes and aspirations, is a shambling, brainless monster that wants to eat you. Anyway, with zombie movies, games, books, and TV shows creating so much wealth, the government is doing what it can to help this new class of job creators. The president wants a stimulus program to outfit zombies with their own shotguns so they can fight back. The Republicans, of course, just want to abolish the death tax.
That would make sense for a zombie. They need the money.
You know.
But zombies don't really have a food budget, do they?
Not per se.
Right.
But it takes money to go chase
people.
Don't zombies eat brains?
Isn't that the delicacy?
But you don't go down to the Five and Dime and buy a scoop of brain. You just...
wandering around a city aimlessly all day long. That's going to pile up. Yeah, exactly.
They don't buy clothes. Look, they dress terribly.
I will agree with you with that. Why do we like zombies so much? Why is this the zombie moment?
We want to be them, Peter.
So it's really envy?
They have a carefree lifestyle.
It's true.
It's just, oh, I don't care about anything. I just want to eat brains. We want to be them.
Yeah.
They don't have a care in the world. Just brains and bummy clothes.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first, it is the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, that's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast from the producers of Wait Wait. This week, how to keep Halloween pumpkins looking wrinkle-free without costly gourd Botox. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, how's it going, Peter?
Not too bad, not too bad. Who's this?
This is John in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hey, how are things in Tulsa?
Well, they were kind of wet and gross today, but weather's been good other than that.
Yeah, that's good. What do you do there?
I scoop dog poop.
Do you really?
I do.
You say that with such pride and joy.
It's an enjoyable profession.
Is it really? Is it happy work?
I like, I enjoy interacting with the dogs and gives me a chance to be outside and enjoy the weather when it's nice. So.
Yes.
How do you get paid for that?
Most of my clients are once a week. I go out and pick up what the dogs leave off, and then they pay me.
Oh, I see. It's a yard by yard thing. It's like you don't just like walk around town picking up.
Well, welcome to the show, John. Now, Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly and two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
Sounds good.
All right, let's hear that first limerick.
When the beetle was still in his youth, his chompers spit out chunks of truth. And his message lives on in this molar of John. So we'll auction off Lennon's old
tooth.
Yes! Very good. Money can't buy you love, but it can buy you a 50-year-old tooth. Omega Auction House in England is auctioning off one of John Lennon's back molars, taken out by a dentist back in the 60s. This is both exciting for fans and also just gross. We're not sure what you do with the molar after you buy it, but it might look great on the mantle next to your collection of authentic Keith Richards kidney stones. Here is your next limerick.
Whether food is served hot or ice cold, on its richness the eye must be sold. This paint will provide us a meal fit for Midas. I've covered our entree with...
gold.
Yes! Burned your toast, no problem. Just make it glitter like gold. Food Finish Spray is an edible spray paint that you can use to gild your food to make it look more expensive. Plus, it's completely healthy, with all natural ingredients like ethyl alcohol, artificial flavorings, E943A, and E943B.
Actually, you know, the kids would love it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know that old saying, you know, there's no blue food?
Yeah.
You know, if they came out with blue, you could have blue food. What are we having tonight? What do you care? Boys, it's blue.
Here is your last limerick.
Our knees are torn, noses are runny. Yet marbles is serious, not funny. When cops come, we're scrambling. They don't like us gambling. Indeed, we play marbles for...
money?
Yes! According to police, in Plymouth, England, scores of bored young ruffians, tired of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, have resorted to playing marbles. And they're running up gambling debts in their marble game so high, they have to steal from their parents and neighbors to pay each other off. Say, parents... there's a way to tell if your teen is a marble fiend. Check his knickers to see if the knees are all shining.
This sounds like a crazy episode of like the Little Rascals. Who
I know
plays
exactly.
Marbles anymore?
Except Darla is like breaking into houses and trying to, you know, she's trying to hawk the gold. It turns out it was just broccoli that got spray painted. It's worth nothing.
Yeah. Alfalfa, yeah, that's nuts.
People still play marbles?
Apparently they do in Plymouth, England.
For money, wow.
And they're running into gambling debts. Carl, how did John do in our quiz?
John had a great game, Peter. John, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now it is time to play our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roxanne Roberts has the lead, Peter. She has 5 points. Tom Baudette and Brian Babylon are tied for second. Both have 3 points.
All right. We have flipped a coin. Tom's elected to go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. EU leaders announced Thursday that they had reached a deal to rescue blank from its debt crisis.
Greece.
Right. Amazon said that the strong sales of Walter Isaacson's biography of blank released this week may make it the year's biggest seller.
Steve Jobs.
Right. Although he was pulled out because of threats to his safety, U.S. officials say they hope the U.S. ambassador to blank will return next month.
To Syria.
Right. A British man who ordered a pair of size 14 and a half slippers was surprised when one of the slippers he received was blank.
Had that weasel thing in it.
No.
It was...
when it was 7 feet long. They missed the decimal. Instead of 14.5, they sent him size 1450, 1,450.
And nobody caught that.
Apparently not. They were like, all right, he just needs a 7 foot long slipper, moving on. Until its owner comes forward, the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office is holding the 8 foot tall blank that washed up on a Florida beach.
Totem pole.
Lego Man. For the first time since 1997, MTV began airing new episodes of the Mike Judge cartoon blank.
What's that called? Oh, son of a gun. This hasn't gone well. You know,
no.
As far as lightning rounds go, I've had better ones. In fact, Brian, why don't you go first?
No. It was Beavis and Butthead, Tom.
Right, that
a
was
British
good.
Police investigation of a mysterious object hovering over a man's house ended with the discovery that the object was blank.
His television antenna.
The moon.
Didn't we just have a story about the sun?
Yes.
Like that?
This is the guy. There was the guy, you're thinking of the British guy who thought that he'd been abducted by aliens and hypnotized, which is why he lost an hour of his life. It turned out they just moved to daylight savings. This guy...
hate it when that happens.
Apparently new to the concept of outside, called the police report a huge object hovering over his house. And he said, quote, the lights were blazing. He eventually figured out it was the moon, a natural satellite of the Earth, but called back later when he noticed a strange man standing in his bathroom mirror. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Well, Tom had 3 correct answers for 6 more points.
Whoa.
He now has 9 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Yeah. Roxanne paid me off.
Yeah. All right, Brian, you are up next, sir. Fill in the blank. On Tuesday, emergency workers rescued a 2-week-old baby and her mother, who were trapped by the earthquake in blank.
Turkey.
Right. Because of price hikes and its failed Quickster plan, blank announced that it had lost 800,000 subscribers.
Netflix.
Right. A forklift driver in Washington State picked up a chemical toilet to move it to a new location, unaware that blank.
Somebody was in it?
Yes. A British coroner revealed this week that singer blank died of alcohol poisoning.
Amy Winehouse.
Right. The new movie Anonymous ruffled feathers in academics circles by questioning the authorship of blank's plays.
Anonymous.
No, it's actually Shakespeare.
Shakespeare.
Damn.
That guy.
In spite of his celebrity status, John Travolta was turned down in Britain when he tried to make a reservation at blank.
Buckingham Palace.
No, he tried to reserve a table at a KFC. Apparently he thought they're called famous bowls, therefore famous people. Carl, how did Brian do in our show?
Brian had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, and Brian has taken the lead.
All right, here we go.
Think you have a chance, Roxanne?
You never know.
You feeling lucky?
How many? Well, let's see. How many does Roxanne need to win?
3 to tie, 4 to win outright.
All right, Roxanne, here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Saif al-Islam, the son of former Libyan leader blank, began negotiating his surrender to The Hague.
Gaddafi.
Right. According to a CBS New York Times poll, more Americans agree with the goals of the blank protesters than disagree.
The Occupy Wall Street.
Right. Experts at the German Space Agency said that a defunct blank crashed into the Indian Ocean.
It was a kind of satellite?
Satellite, yeah. This week the CDC recommended that the HPV vaccine also be given to blank.
To young males.
Yes, boys. A Kentucky man arrested after driving into a ditch told cops he had blanked before getting behind the wheel.
Tingling ear.
No, he bounce. Told the police that he had only had two pizzas to drink. Because her entire New Hampshire campaign staff quit, blank was forced to file her presidential primary paperwork by mail.
Michelle Bachmann.
Right. On Tuesday, former Red Sox GM Theo Epstein was officially introduced as the president of baseball operations for the blank.
Oh, Cubs.
Chicago Cubs. Yeah. An Ohio man who was awoken by the police while sleeping in his car by the road said he attacked the officer just because blank.
He thought it was a werewolf.
No, he was a former wrestler who was having a dream about wrestling. The officer approached the sleeping driver only to find himself put in a headlock by the groggy former high school wrestling star. They got into a little bout there, and the officer won the impromptu match by using the controversial taser hold. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed 3 to tie, but Roxanne had 6 correct.
Oh, my God. And dominated.
Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Congratulations. Roxanne, there are people in this room. You might get a call to be the next quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. Because anybody who can dominate with that confidence here. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will become of that 7 billionth baby as it grows up. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at progressive.com. And Angie's List with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, and Big Bongo. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager, Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Hannah Withers. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Thanks to Joshua Lingenfelter and Karen Steele and everyone at Clues Memorial Hall at Butler University. BJ Libman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Shillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical directors from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will become of that 7 billionth baby? Roxanne Roberts.
Lucky 7 billion will turn out to be a wizard numbers, will balance the U.S. budget, save the euro, and finally determine if calories count if you eat standing up.
Brian Babylon.
By the time that kid goes to college, tuition will be $7 billion.
And Tom Baudet.
An unplanned teen pregnancy leads to the birth of the 8 billionth child. Then after 20 years and a happy marriage, she'll give birth to the 9th billionth child.
If the 7 billionth baby does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Roxanne Roberts, Brian Babylon, Tom Baudet. Thanks to Richard Miles, everyone at WFYI. Thanks to our fabulous crowd here at the Clues Memorial Hall in Indianapolis, capital of the Indiana Empire. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs. Listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Inside President Obama's war room and the decision to intervene in Libya. Also, we check in with a Rotary Club in Los Altos, California that adopted AIDS awareness as its cause in the 90s and is now expanding its work in Africa. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
Hi there, I'm Gian Gomeshi. Cœur de Pirate is the stage moniker of Quebec singer-songwriter Beatrice Martin. Her 2008 debut album wowed critics and earned her a big following in her home province and in France as well. A chat and performance with Cœur de Pirate from her new record Blonde, coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock. Nashville weather this afternoon, mostly sunny skies and the high in the lower 60s. Scattered sprinkles tonight, mostly cloudy, the low around 40 degrees. It's 57 degrees right now in Nashville at 12.